Okay, we're coming on to Ruth chapter 3 this week. And just a reminder as I come to read it of what I said last week, that the Bible's full of stories. The biggest part of the Old Testament is these narratives. And it really matters that you interact with them. It's not, I'm going to be telling you, as I said last week, some of the things that this makes me think of. But it's you that have to say, well, what does it make me think of? How does it lead me on through this particular passage, this particular part of God's word? And I just find it wonderful that there's so many of these people with their rough spots. Don't know about you, but you're very conscious, aren't you, of your own rough spots, of the fact of where you get it wrong and occasionally where you get it right. But to see these ordinary people in Scripture just reminds us that God can work with us too. Let's read Ruth chapter 3. Again, it's you need to imagine this. You need to get it inside your head. So you might find it helpful to close your eyes while I'm reading and picture the scene in Bethlehem all those thousands of years ago with these two ladies living in fairly basic accommodation as far as we can see, not really getting involved yet in the town's life. Naomi's been, as far as we can see in the text, quite depressed, and we're moving on. We see her sort of, well, we'll see. And there's just, in this chapter, there's just the three characters, Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz. Picture it. One day, Naomi, Ruth's mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you where you'll be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he'll be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. So you wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes and go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you're there till he's finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then, go and uncover his feet and lie down. He'll tell you what to do." "I'll do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So, she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When Boaz had finished eating and drinking, and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. And Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I'm your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a family guardian." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You've not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do all you ask. All the people of the town know that you're a woman of noble character. Although it's true that I am a family guardian, there is another who's more closely related than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to do his duty as your family guardian, good, let him redeem you. But if he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized, and he said, "No one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor." He also said, "Bring me the shawl you're wearing and hold it out." And when she did it, he poured into it 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back to town. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for that man will not rest until the matter is settled today." It's another film script, isn't it? All sorts of stuff going on there. We begin with the first 4 verses, Naomi's speech. And I think this is interesting in verse 1. Some of you have known depression and that sense of not being able to do anything. And in the previous chapter, we'd noticed that Ruth took all the initiative. But when you're beginning to come out of that, beginning to think, "I really, perhaps I can get on with something." And you just begin to see, don't you, that picture of Naomi beginning to say, "Oh, maybe I've got responsibilities." And we have that phrase, "I must find a home for you." It's actually the literal translation that is there. "I must find rest for you. I must find a place where you can be looked after." It's Naomi's beginning to move from what's happening to me to what's happening to us and even what's happening to you. And that's interesting. But she's also decided that Boaz needs, as she picks up her responsibilities, Boaz needs to pick up his responsibilities, needs to do something about that. And we have this phrase, "Boaz, you know, Boaz, you've been working in his field and he is a relative and this is who he is and he's a family guardian and, I'm sure there's something we can do with Boaz." And then she gives these instructions to Ruth. And there's an awful lot of ambiguity in this chapter. You can't say, "This is what happened." You can only say, "I wonder, what was it that Naomi was actually suggesting Ruth should do?" One way you could read it is that Naomi is suggesting that Ruth go. There's been a thing in the news recently about an American governor who wouldn't let a reporter. Did you read it? He was standing for office, and a reporter wanted to shadow him for the day, and he said, "No, you can't, because you're a woman, unless you bring a male colleague with you, because I'm not going to sit in the car with you on your own." And people are going to and fro and say, he said, out of respect for his wife, and you kind of think, well, either his wife doesn't trust him and he doesn't think of himself as responsible or whatever, or honourable, or he doesn't trust the woman. And you think, why didn't he say, "I'll bring a male colleague"? But there we are. He was afraid she was going to manipulate him. She might just possibly something. And that is a possibility, isn't it? Sometimes you do have to be careful about these things, and you do have to. But what it looks as if is happening here is Naomi was suggesting that Ruth deliberately manipulated in Boaz and forcing him to do something which he may or may not have wanted to do. It's very difficult to read it in any other way, isn't it? You can do. There are ways of seeing it slightly differently. But it really does seem as if Naomi's suggesting, "Let's make Boaz the fall guy." Is that a good thing? Is that really what she's suggesting? Are we meant to see this as an example to follow? Is manipulation ever a good way to manage people? These are questions that the text raises, aren't they? reading it, are we? Oh, this is in the Bible. Was that the right way to behave? What are we supposed to make of that? What are we supposed to do with that? Well, we read on. Ruth says, and this is again in the last chapter, we saw Ruth taking the initiative. Ruth, probably here, she's pleased to see Naomi actually suggesting anything. She says, okay, I'll do what you say. Remember that when we move on, because again, we're told she went down to the threshing floor, did everything her mother-in-law told her to do. When did she? She didn't ask any questions. She didn't ask, what do you mean? Are you really suggesting that I go and compromise Boaz so that he'll be forced to do this? And the ambiguity again in verse 7. Move on to Boaz's reaction. When he'd finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, it's almost certainly saying he'd had a lot to drink. All right, the wording kind of spreads out a little bit. He went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. They'd been winnowing, they'd been getting the grain together. He goes off to a quiet spot. Now, it would have been in the dark. Literally. While they were eating and drinking, there would have been candles and oil lamps around the place, but most of those, if not all of them, would have been blown out when Boaz, as the boss, went to find a quiet place to lie down, get some shut eye before the next day starts. I don't know if you've been in places. We hardly ever get out of the light, do we? It's very difficult if you, even at night, you've switched the lights off, but you can see something through the window, even with blackout curtains, and it's never really dark, or very rarely really dark, and there's usually a clock or something that you can see. Have you ever been to one of these, like the Blue John Caves in Derbyshire, when they take you down and they turn the lights out? Or out in the country in places in the back of beyond, there's very few back of beyond places in Britain, but there are sometimes in Scotland where it's pitch black. In those cases, you can't see anything. Now, there may have been a few snippets of light in this place, but not really. You couldn't really. It would be totally impossible to recognise anybody in that context. So Ruth had to look very carefully to see where it was that Boaz lay down, and then she goes, approaches quietly, uncovers his feet. Now, more ambiguity. Sometimes feet is used as a euphemism for other parts of the body, less mentionable in public places. But it may have just been she uncovered his feet. So that you'd get cold. Some of us tend to stick your feet outside the duvet when it's to cool down. But when it's winter and it is cold, your feet are the ones, aren't they? If they're not covered up, if your feet aren't warm, the rest of you isn't warm and you're more likely to wake up. So that could just be what it's talking about. It's just that's what happened. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. Perhaps he was just cold. And he woke up and, oh, there's somebody there. Perhaps there was just enough light to see it was a woman. Perhaps it wasn't. But there was a woman just lying. And he says, I'm sure that wasn't there last night. Who are you? No idea. Who are you? And Ruth says, I'm your servant Ruth. Interesting. She doesn't describe herself as Ruth the Moabite, and in fact that doesn't happen in this chapter. For Boaz, the Ruth nationality doesn't seem to have been relevant. He uses it, you'll see, in chapter 4. But all the way through we've had Ruth the Moabite, Ruth from Moab, Ruth the Moabite, Ruth the Moabite woman, and so on. And here we don't. This is just Ruth and Boaz. Possibly because Boaz had two foreign women in his ancestry, Rahab and Tamar. So for him it wasn't the same question. But it's interesting that Ruth herself doesn't this time describe herself. Just, I'm your servant, Ruth. Next bit's interesting. Naomi had said, okay, Ruth, go, lie down, and wait for him to tell you what to do. Ruth, I'm your servant, Ruth, and this is what I'm here for. Really think that's interesting. She followed what Naomi had asked, but it really seems to me, this is a bit speculative, but it really seems to me that she thought, I really don't want to do this. This doesn't seem right. There's something I'm not comfortable with. So the minute he wakes up, she says, I'm Ruth, and this is what I've come for, and this is what I want you to do. Interesting, isn't it? It's a real possibility. She's doing what Naomi suggests. She's not dishonouring Naomi. She's not saying in any sense, I'm not sure she was quite right here, but she is saying to Boaz, this is it. This is what I'm asking. Take it or leave it. You can do it or not do it. But I'm not trying to manipulate you into doing something that you don't want to do. I'm just saying, this is what I'd like. And you are a family guardian, she reminds him. So spread the corner of your garment over me. That means, again, it's a bit ambiguous, but it's probably meaning, it's a way, a proverb for saying, look, you've got to take responsibility for me. And Boaz would clearly understand that she's asking for marriage in this context. And his response is interesting. We have, again, the Lord bless you. That's Boaz's first thought, is to relate it to what God is doing. The Lord bless you. That's his, it may just be a phrase that he's using, but it's interesting. Later on, he says again, as surely as the Lord lives, I'm going to do this. So it does seem for Boaz that God was part of his life, bringing it in on just as normal part of conversation. And that's a challenge to me, to say, is the fact that I believe and trust in God part of my normal? Is that the first thing that comes up, or do I just get on and occasionally, if it's Sunday, you might do that? How do you work that out? How do I bring God into daily life? Because it's not a big deal here. It's just part of what Boaz is saying. So the Lord bless you, my daughter. And then he says, very interesting way of looking at it, because he knows Ruth. He picks up immediately then who she is, and the fact that she's looked after Naomi and taken responsibility and worked hard to do it, that she was a kind person, she'd been kind. But now he realizes that she's, in obedience to Naomi, willing to go the extra mile. And he makes it clear that he understands that the fact that he's rich isn't the key issue for her. It's a really lovely picture of his understanding of Ruth, because he says, thank you, basically. You're asking me. Ministry, helping people, is a privilege. And that was part of Boaz's understanding. He wasn't saying, okay then, I've got the resources, I'm going to help you. He's saying, thank you for letting me be part of the answer to your issue. Is that nice? Sometimes you talk to people who are having to raise money for their ministry, missionaries and so on. And you want to say sometimes, I don't like doing that, I don't like asking for money. And so what you're asking actually is you're offering people the opportunity of having a part in your ministry. It's what we're doing when we give to Stephanie or to the Duprees or whoever it is that we're giving to. You have a chance to be part of their ministry. And that's a privilege. And Boaz recognises that privilege. Says, you're doing me a kindness. He doesn't say, oh, all right then. A bit like I did yesterday. It has to be admitted when agreeing to be a marshal for the walking day. It was not a, oh, what a privilege. It was a, oh, somebody's got to do it. Which is, I confess. But actually, it was a great time. I enjoyed it. I had perhaps more chance to interact with people doing that than the walking, which I usually enjoy. Anyway, that's totally by the by. But Boaz is saying, you're doing me a kindness, so don't be afraid. He knows who Ruth is. He knows where she's at. He knows what he's doing. We get a really good character picture here of both Ruth and Boaz. He accepts his status and responsibility. Talked last week about the fact that he took an awful long time to do that, to pick that up. But he said, okay, yeah, I can see what you mean. This would be a possibility, and actually it would be okay. Heard somebody just recently saying, Boaz thinks he's onto it. Here's this good-looking, beautiful girl offering herself to him, and, oh, isn't he the lucky one? But I don't think he's saying that. I think he's just coming across as an honourable man, and I don't think it's the issue of, well, actually she seduced him and now he can't do anything about it. I think it's as it says, personally. And he's saying, okay, and it's not that he'd fallen deeply in love with Ruth. He says, if the other one will do it, that's all right. But if not, yeah, okay. We'll do this. Maybe we'll do it together. And so let's think what to do next. He says, stay here. Well, she couldn't do much else, actually, when it's pitch black, walking through a town when you can't see anything. Most of you won't have experienced this, but some of us can remember the day in 1964, I think it was, when the Clean Air Act came in. Yeah? The Smokeless Fuel Act. Lived in Sale at the time and went to school in Rusholme in Manchester, which is about 7 miles away. And when it was foggy, school closed early. And this particular day, you go to the bus stop, it was absolutely thick, thick fog. It just doesn't happen now. You think it's thick fog, but it's just not. You would stand at the bottom of a lamppost and you couldn't see the light at the top of the lamppost. It just wasn't there. You could just see this grey. You might be able to see about 2 feet in front of you. And on this particular day, the buses just didn't come. And I walked 5 miles before a bus appeared through this thick fog. And you know, you're wanting to cross the road. You can't see the other side of the road. It's frightening. It's dreadful. You couldn't expect Ruth to walk home in the dark. It's like that. And Boaz says, okay, stay the night here. Can't do much else. But you love the way it recognises the reality of the situation and shows his thinking that through. Okay. In the morning, if this other guy, we don't know his name, if this other guy is willing, then I'll work that out. And if not, then I'll do it. It's as if he's saying, here you are, I'll sort it out, and whatever happens later doesn't matter. We'll deal with it. We'll get it done. We'll sort it. And so, lie here until the morning. So she did, but got up before anybody could be recognised. It was still dark, but the light's beginning to just make it safe to walk. And he said, no one must know that a woman came to the threshing floor. Now, again, more ambiguity. Is he saying it to Ruth? Or is he saying it to the workers around? Had somebody seen her? Is he saying, don't make sure that your email doesn't get leaked? Or is he just saying it to Ruth? No one must know this, so you've got to go now. Or is he saying, she's been here, but nobody must know because I'm protecting her reputation and my reputation? She did come, but nothing happened, I think, is the impression of that comes across here, although it is ambiguous. So he says, bring me the shawl, hold it out, and gives her this huge amount of barley. And the text there is a bit vague. It could be he went back to town or she went back to town. It doesn't make any difference. True for both of them. And it's as if he's saying, this is what happens now. Whatever happens later, here's some food. I'm still going to help you, even if I don't take up the kinsman redeemer role in terms of marriage. And then Ruth goes back to Naomi for the debrief. When she came to her mother-in-law, Naomi said, oh, how did it go? What happened? Did it work? My plot. And Ruth told her everything Boaz had done and added, that interesting. So the measures of barley was an extra. Everything he'd done was to say, who are you? Okay, I'll talk to the other guy. See how it goes. I will do it. And here, as an extra, is some barley. Huge amount. More food to add to the other grain that they had. He said, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Isn't that nice? He may have said that. He doesn't say that. He just gave it to her. But is Ruth, is that what he said? Or is it what Ruth is saying to Naomi? Because she's pointing out, he's interested in you. You matter. Don't go back to don't go back home empty-handed. Don't go back to Naomi empty-handed. He's introducing Naomi into the conversation. He's saying, you matter too. It's about me and it's about you. And Naomi said, okay, let's wait and see what happens. It's going to be sorted. We started at the beginning of the chapter with, I must find rest for you. I must find a place of safety. I must find a way forward for you. You were married. Whoops. Never good at this. There we are. you were married to my son, and I've got a responsibility and we're going to do this. So, okay, it'll happen one way or the other. You'll find a home with this guy or a home with this guy. And the ambiguities of that will be looked at next week. Interesting here, this man will not rest until the matter is settled, until you find rest. Trusts in Boaz. Naomi recognises that Boaz is a good guy. Question mark. Is there any sign of trust in God? You decide. Doesn't say. Is this just Boaz carrying out? Boaz clearly relating to God. Boaz is the one who mentions God. Naomi doesn't at all. Is that significant or is it not? Is the text deliberately missing it out, deliberately creating more ambiguity there? So, what do we make of it all? Fascinating story, fascinating characters, all sorts of implications. Questions. How do we deal with ambiguity in Scripture? No doubt that there is ambiguity here, isn't there? People understand it differently, think, oh, was it this or was it that? Did they really mean that? Is that how? It's not clear, is it? Exactly what was happening. Does that give us freedom to almost play with the text, to use our imagination to, yeah, I think it does. That does happen in the way of the narratives are looked at. They are presented that way. The ambiguity is almost certainly deliberate to give you a chance to look at what's happening there. But it's a question, it's a difficult question, and people sometimes have answered it by saying, oh, well, it's in the Bible, so that must be exactly what God intended. You only need to read Judges to know that that's not how things work. Lots of times things happened that were not God's desire. Right through Judges you get this, again, the Israelites disobeyed. Did God intend them to disobey? No. Nonsense. But we don't have to say, oh, it happened in the Bible, so that must be right. And as we said before, the people who say, oh, I can't believe in God because if he supports this, that's not how it works. That's not what the text says. So we have to look at that. We have to say, how do we deal with ambiguity? How do we decide whether any given behaviour in Scripture is meant to stand as a positive example or a negative example? That's your responsibility, to look at it and to say, is this right or is it not right? Was this good or was it not good? Don't get, as we said before, in a different context, like people do with Samson, and think, oh, well, he's in the Bible, so he must be a hero. And then they read it and find there's absolutely nothing heroic whatsoever in the whole story. But we kind of twist it round to make it nice. Don't have to do that. You have to look at what's there. It's deliberately presenting you with life as it is, people as they are. And you have to decide. And the question there, leaving you with really, is what are we meant to get out of this story? Why are we being told that? That's something you have to ask, you have to wrestle with when you're reading it. Why do you think we're being told this? Why does this matter? Now, it relates, and again, you'll see this next week, to the genealogy at the end. Is all this just about, oh, this is to show David's ancestors? I don't believe so. I think the story itself is significant, and you've got to wrestle with that significant. Does the fact that this is, as we're told at the beginning of Ruth, in the time of the judges? So we know it was a pretty awful situation. Does that affect the way that we read it? Do we see that in the, oh, it happens today too, doesn't it? The Oh, there's no smoke without fire there in that situation. You know what would have happened, yes. Is it a society where suspicion overrules everything? Does that affect, does our knowledge that this was a pretty dreadful society, and we see that all the way through, and including in Bethlehem, we've seen it even in Ruth, the repeated mention of the danger of not of knife crime in that sense, but of abuse, of being assaulted, the fact of nobody, because it was a foreigner, helping in a way that the covenant said that they should. So does that fact influence the way we should read it, or just the way we do read it, or whatever? And a final question. Some of these come up in different form in the study notes that are coming out. How do you think, I just think this is an interesting question, how do you think Naomi, Ruth, Boaz, and Obed would have reacted to this story when they heard it read later on? Would they have appreciated the way that it was told about them, or would they thought, it wasn't like that, or whatever? That's an interesting question to help us investigate. But for us, what are we going to do with that? Are we going to respond to the good parts of Boaz's character and the way he reacted? Are we going to look out for people who have been depressed and help them and recognise and show them that they do count? All sorts of those little things, and what your circumstances are will affect what you get out of it, won't they? What you read. I'm sure some of you, and I'd love to hear it, some of you will have noticed things in the text. You think, oh, you didn't mention that. That was what came out for me. Revel in that. Look at that. Let God speak to you through that. And whatever happens to you this week, whether it's this or this or this, know that the one who's with you, who is your Redeemer, will, one way or another, make sure you come to rest, get a place of security, and revel in that too.